Today in the studio, it's the early 80s albums that established Dire Straits as the top-selling act on compact disc that decade.
Slipping in the slide. Skate away. That's all.
All that attention, the fame you realize is like a byproduct of the success, you know. And success is something I'd recommend to anybody. I can't think of anything good about fame particularly. I mean, if you can, let me know. I'm usually pretty cheerful. I do think that the sense of humour is probably the most important thing that you can have to do this, because you really got to want to.
Everybody knows it's
Hello, this is Mark Knopfler here. I'm in the studio for Making Movies and Love Over Gold.
With the autumn 1978 release of their debut containing the worldwide hit Sultans of Swing, Dire Straits stood in stark contrast to the punk purge that otherwise was grabbing the rock world's attention. London-based Dire Straits was built around their songwriter frontman Mark Knopfler, who possessed a distinctive guitar sound that's remained immediately identifiable to this day. His lyrics were literary and often Dylan-esque, while Mark Knopfler's rich baritone voice, neither elite nor effete, was fitting for a street-corner minstrel. Dire Straits' follow-up album to their spectacular debut, 1979's Communique, is an overlooked gem that satisfies today even more than ever. But Communique didn't contain the big hit in America that their stateside record company could exploit, as they had with Sultans of Swing. Here's Mark Knopfler.
Well, when you're in the middle of this whole thing, you know, it seems different to you. Some records do better than other records at different places, different times, and at different places in the world. You know, you'll get one record that takes off big time, and I remember Making Movies, which was, I think was the third album, that took off big time in Italy, you know. Why? I don't know. Nobody. But for a while, you know, that was that. So, or something's big in Spain, and this and that's big. And you know, you tend to sort of respond globally in some ways, and There's no rhyme or reason to it. And I think record companies are kind of used to that happening with the people that they've got. You know, that their temperature changes, you know, in different parts of the world at different times.
Let it run.
sound, there's any to complain. And the big wheel keep on turning, neon burning up above. Girl, I dig another hustle just to make it big. And rock away, rock away. Oh, rock away, rock away. Your girl looks so pretty to me, like it always did. Oh, like the Spanish city to me when we were kids. Your girl, it looks so pretty to me, just like it always. Like it always did, like the Spanish city to me, when we were kids. Thank you.
from Dire Straits' 1983 album called Making Movies, that's Tunnel of Love. The original Dire Straits quartet of Mark Knopfler, his brother David on rhythm guitar, John Ilsley on bass, and drummer Pick Withers entered the studio in mid-summer 1980, but after only a month, younger brother David left the band. Mark Knopfler explains.
Well, it's a whole combination of things, but I think, that Dave's making records, and it's a hard thing to do, and I wish him luck. As a way of life, I just think it's something that you have to be 100% suited to, you know. And we're touring a lot, and I'm not really altogether sure whether even that, you know, whether touring would suited Dave as much as it suited certainly me and John. So that's part of it too. I think it's the kind of thing where it's horses for courses, you know. And I feel as though in some ways I'm one of the lucky ones, because I love to write, and when I'm writing and I feel that enjoyment, you know, I feel that real satisfaction. Sometimes, even when it's not happening, I'd just go, you know, leave it for a while and come back to it, and it just feels right to me. And then when it's recording time, it's one of the highs again in my year. I don't get together with my guys that often. We've been together about 10 years or so now, but it's a high for me. You know, it's an exciting time, and it's something that I'm very much looking forward to all the time, as to when we're going to get together again and spend that little time together and be recording. And then when it's time to maybe go and play for people, again, I'm looking forward to that. I feel it doesn't really matter what kind of, what it is. I'm looking forward to getting out and playing for people, and that there's a kind of a sense of that you and the audience are celebrating the fact that you're together at that point, you see. So that makes me pretty lucky. And not everybody has that round peg, round hole kind of thing about them. I mean, some people don't like one aspect of it, or this aspect of it, or that aspect of it. So I feel really fortunate in that sense. You know, it's as a way of life, I feel as though it suits me 100%.
Notably, Dire Straits was working on the Making Movies album with veteran producer Jimmy Iovine, who was their third producer in as many albums. Iovine's contribution was to punch up the rhythm section sound and to enlist E Street Band pianist Roy Bittan for his sparkling sound. With Bruce Springsteen's band members rarely playing on others' albums, I was curious how Mark Knopfler procured Roy Bittan.
I can't remember, but I do know that Roy played beautifully on that. I mean, I remember asking him about, because I wanted this rippling thing at the end of Tunnel of Love, you know, so the whole ride thing going up and down. I wanted to get that whole feeling, the way, you know, the rides would rise and fall. And the only way I could think of it would be to sort of, try and get this, try and achieve this arpeggio up and down thing. And Roy just sat down and did it. Yeah, it's great. That's why I wanted to put that skater's waltz at the front of it, was playing on the beach as a kid in on the Northeast. You know, there's a kind of a mini little fairground thing that was part of the coast there called the Spanish City. The locals, it was a colloquial term, the locals used to call it the Spanish City because it had these little white turrets that are kind of Eastern style, and so maybe it was that Moorish feel that, you know, maybe the Geordies referred to it as Spanish, you know, the Spanish city. But I remember that melody was playing when I'd be a little boy playing on the sand. I remember hearing that melody and trying to imitate the sound of it, gargling that melody in the back of my throat. You know, like, ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba. And I liked that melody a lot. So I associate that with being a little kid at the seaside. So it's a kind of, and I was already thinking of that, sort of connecting that, transatlanticing that, and, you know, connecting it up with, you know, the New York experience, just their Rockaway thing. And there's always been that little thread with me where I've wanted to sort of make a connection between the, across the Atlantic.
I've seen a girl on a one-way corridor, stealing down a wrong-way street, for all the world like a urban toreador. She had wheels on her feet. And the cars do the usual dances, same old cruise in the curbside crawl. But the roller girl, she's taking chances. I just love to see her take them all. No fear, alone at night, she's sailing through the crowd. Enemies, his bones are tight and the music's playing loud. Hallelujah, here she comes, Queen Rollerball. And enchanté, can I say, care at all? You know, she used to have to wait around, she used to be the lonely one. But now that she can skate around town, she's the only one. No fear, alone at night, she's sailing through the crowd. In her ears, his bones are tight and the music's playing loud. She gets rock and roll in a rock and roll station, in a rock and roll dream. She's making movies on location. She don't know what it means. And the music maker wants story, and the story was whatever was the song, what it was. Roller girl, don't worry, DJ play the movies all night long, all night long. She tortures taxi drivers just for fun. She likes to read that. Toro, Toro taxi, see you tomorrow, my son. So she let a big truck grease her hip. Oh, she's got her own world in the city, yeah. Can't even shoot on her, no, no, no. She got her own world in the city. The city's been so rude to her. She is alone at night, sailing through the crowd. So tight and the music's playing loud. She gets rock and roll in a rock and roll station, in a rock and roll dream. She's making movies on location. She don't know what it means, but the music make her wanna be the story. Slipping in the slide, skate away, that's all. Yeah.
Dire Straits from 1980's Making Movies album with Skate Away. The album's title comes from a line in the song, but coming up next, Mark Knopfler admits to it signaling another aspiration. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for Dire Straits' Making Movies.
Hello, this is Mark Knopfler here. I'm in the studio for Making Movies.
And I'm Redbeard. I asked Mark Knopfler how he came to half-sing, half-speak several of the most popular songs from the Making Movies album, as well as its follow-up, Love Over Gold. Knopfler is delightfully self-deprecating in his response.
Oh, I don't know. Probably just because I couldn't sing, you know. I have no idea. I can actually sing better now than... I gave up smoking cigarettes about 8 years ago or something, and so I enjoy singing now much more. Got a whole lot more power, and I seem to have more range too. I'm just enjoying singing more now, you know. So that's part of it, I suppose. If I just see something on the street and write a song about it, then that will still happen. So in other words, if I see something, it can always, there's always the danger that it'll make me want to write it. But songs come from all kinds of reasons. Things you hear, things you see. You know, you steal scraps of this and that and chuck them in the junkyard at the back, and then maybe sometime or another you make a song out of it.
Boys don't know anything, but I know what I want.
One of my personal favorites of that entire year, 1980, that's called Espresso Love, featuring the infectious rhythm guitar of Mark Knopfler. I noted to him that lyrically, the Making Movies album contained a number of third-person narratives, a lot of storytelling.
Yeah, well, that's a type of song, but there's no formula to songwriting. I mean, some of them are like that. Other songs can be short, just a little thought. One of the things I love about songwriting is that it doesn't follow, there are no rules to, in terms of almost anything. They come for different reasons, and you can be in a situation and you recognize some of the little song alarm goes off. Why it should do that, I really don't know, but, and you can talk about those kind of songs. Other songs, they're much harder to explain, you know, it's a more nebulous thing, and sometimes the harder you try to explain them, the more you feel them getting away from you. And plus, there's always the danger that I'll spoil it for you, because you'll have your own idea of what it is for you.
So, was it a coincidence, after titling their third Dire Straits album, Making Movies, that Mark Knopfler would then do his first film soundtrack to the movie Local Hero?
Probably not. I was experimenting at that stage, starting to, as you say, you know, bringing in piano and more keyboards, and so learning how to be a half-baked arranger, really. It's kid stuff, but that's what I was, I suppose, doing. And then I thought maybe I could fool people enough into trying to do some music for a film. And every time I do a film, I feel like I'm being some kind of imposter. You know, it's because there are people, many people who could do very fine work in that area. I mean, I love the cinema, and I've got tremendous respect for acting and for the skills that go into making films. It's not something where I feel it's really my, you know, it's not my best area. I'm all right on, sometimes thematically I can rumble something up, but as a skill, you know, as a real high musicalist, it's not something that is my forte. And I think now I know I'm a lot happier just writing my little ditties and working on them and making the songs.
Come on, social minds when the time goes in. Gonna
without apology or hesitation. That's Mark Knopfler's declaration, Solid Rock, on the 1980 Dire Straits Making Movies album. I'm Redbeard. Next, Mark chooses Love Over Gold in the studio.
Hello, this is Mark Knopfler here. I'm in the studio for Making Movies and Love Over Gold.
And I'm Redbeard. Welcome back. In hindsight, it's clear that the unique sound of Dire Straits was immutable and generated from within, for their highly defined sound had stayed consistent through their first three albums. Yet, each was produced by a different veteran, and Dire Straits' fourth studio album, 1982's Love Over Gold, was steered for the first time by Mark Knopfler himself.
I was in a sort of New York phase, and I was spending a lot of time in New York and in splitting it up with London, and so it was the New York, just being in New York, and Jimmy was very New York, you know, and he's had a great partnership with a wonderful engineer as well called Shelley Yakis, and Jimmy was great fun to be with, you know. He'd always say, hey, drums ain't loud enough, Shelley, turn it up. And it was a great fun time. And I feel, again, really lucky that, as well, you know, with Muff, the first album, and with Jerry and Barry, with the great thing about all these people and over all the years that, as it's gone on, you know, is to have had such great engineers working on the records, you know, because these people make you sound better than you are. And and it's sort of gone on like that. There was Neil Dorfman later on, and you know, I learned a little bit from all of these people, and I wasn't conscious of trying to learn anything. I'm still not, you know. That just by being around them a little bit, you pick up little things here and there, and so that got me to a stage where I started to actually enjoy recording, you know, more than I was. And I think that's gone on, where I kind of get more out of it now, just the whole process of trying to get something, you know, a performance recorded is, it's a lovely little art, you know. I don't know very much about it, and I've tried to kind of keep it that way, and not try and get too in deep into it where it affects, slows down what I'm doing too much. But being lucky enough to work with such good engineers over the years, some of it rubs off, a little bit of it just rubs off here and there, and you learn from all of them, you know. So it's been a great trip. We'll be right back.
morning, Cindy Clay. I'm not surprised to see you here. You've got smokers cough from smoking, brewers droop from drinking beer. I don't know how you came to get the Betty Davis knees, but worst of all, young man, you've got industrial disease. He wrote me a prescription, he said, you are depressed. I'm glad you came to see me to get this off your chest. Come back and see me later. Next patient, please. Send in another victim of industrial disease.
Probably a favorite over at the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. That's Dire Straits with Industrial Disease from the Love Over Gold album. It's safe to say that, as producer this time, Mark Knopfler could stretch out the epic song Telegraph Road and sequence it right up front as the first song on the Love Over Gold album.
I've never been pressured by a record company to... I've never felt, anyway, I've never certainly never felt that pressured by a record company to do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. Occasionally they'll ask for an edit on something so that they can get it on the radio.
Yeah, us and, guys at radio, right.
That'll happen, but sometimes, and it's a funny thing, and it's sometimes an edit, you know, ain't necessarily the worst thing in the world. Especially with somebody as slow and long-winded as me. So, you know, why are the songs too long? Well, you got a lot to say. Well, you're taking your time saying it, you know. I mean, I don't... I can... You know, it doesn't kill me to... World peace is not hanging on the thing, you know. So I like having a readership out there, you know. If I was writing a book, it would take as long as it took and... But then I'd kind of nice having a readership, don't you think? I think most novelists would say that. I'm not saying I'd been involved in a mad scramble to get on the radio. I mean, I don't really necessarily feel as though some stuff gets on the radio and some stuff doesn't. And it's never really always going to be a representation of what's on the record as a whole. But, you know, there's a percentage of stuff finds its way onto the radio somehow, and that's fine with me. I don't really think necessarily about the success of a record. I've never thought about it, whether it's, and some records will do a little bit better than others, sometimes big difference. I mean, Brothers in Arms took off in a big way, but I'd just make it another record. You don't really, the sales have got nothing whatsoever to do with, you know, the fact is whether you succeeded in what you set out to do or not.
Well, a long time ago, came a man on a track, walking 30 miles with a sack on his back, and he put down his load where he thought it was the best, made a home in the wilderness. Built a cabin and a winter store, and he plowed up the ground by the cooling shore. The other travelers came walking down the track, and they never went further, no, they never went back. Then came the churches, then came the telegraph road.
they shut it down. I got a right to go to work, but there's no work here to be found. Yes, and they say, we're gonna have to pay what's owed. We're gonna have to reap from some seed that's been sowed. And the birds up on the wires and the telegraph poles, they can always fly away from this rain and this cold. You can hear them singing out the telegraph code all the way down the telegraph road.
Thank you.
That's the epic Telegraph Road from Dire Straits' 1982 album, Love Over Gold. I'm Redbeard.